right, we are back. I'm Janine, and this is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. And standing by to join me is Dr. Alan Townsend. We're going to talk about his new book, This Ordinary Stardust, A Scientist's Path from Grief to Wonder. I'm going to just read you a little bit, and then I'll bring him on. People are trillions of outer space atoms moving around temporarily as one, sensing and seeing and falling in love. Then those atoms scatter, joining one new team for a bit, then another. Far from depressing, I found this notion profoundly comforting. Welcome to the show, Dr. Townsend.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
When did you decide you wanted to write this book? Was this a long time coming?
Oh, great question. I had been thinking about writing a very different book for a while and then started to write some shorter posts just as my family was dealing with what we went through. But really it happened when my late wife, Diana, asked me to write it just a few weeks before she passed.
So I want to mention to listeners what we're talking about. It was a decade ago, right? You received two horrible diagnoses. I'll let you elaborate on that.
Well, it started with my, at the time, four-year-old daughter, Neva, started to show some unusual symptoms for a little kid. She wasn't growing correctly and had a bunch of headaches, and one thing led to another, and we discovered that she had a pretty rare brain tumor. So that obviously turned your life upside down, and
you're
playing catch-up in a hurry. And then about a year later, her mother, Diana, was diagnosed with two brain tumors of her own, totally unrelated, but just bad luck.
It's interesting that they're completely unrelated.
Yeah. Pretty crazy. They're very, very different forms of cancer, so they really have nothing to do with each other. But
Wow. And your wife was a scientist as well.
She was. Yeah, she was what's known as an environmental microbiologist. And so we were both biologists of one kind or another.
I asked you this before you came on, but do you feel that your background helped you in some way through your path of grief?
It did, and some of that recognition, honestly, is a bit post hoc through the process of writing the book and thinking back, but it did. I'd say it first helped just when we were faced with the diagnoses. I mean, I guess being a scientist is both a blessing and a curse.
Mm-hmm.
But we knew how to read primary literature, look into studies, try to dig through a lot of data and information to get the best answers we could about what treatment options to pursue. So we did a lot of that at the outset. But, you know, later on, science really did kind of become a bit of a source of comfort and even, you know, I would say spiritual comfort for me in dealing with the grief.
Yeah. You talk about, I think, the connection between science and religion. What did you learn about this connection?
Well, I'm no expert for sure, but where that comes from in this is that I didn't grow up with any faith traditions or organized religion, just wasn't part of my life. And when I was considerably younger, I was definitely subject, I think, to something that I see sometimes in some scientists. I wouldn't say this is broadly true. A bit of skepticism there, or even a little bit of dismissal of them. And then as I grew older and went through this, you know, in the end, boiled down, they're each lots of things, but a lot of their purpose is a source of comfort for people, a source of answers, a source of something to anchor ourselves to try to find a path to a better life, and a source of, you know, kind of feeling some comfort in something greater than us. And so I started to see a lot more parallels than I once thought, and kind of reshift my thinking on it.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Dr. Alan Townsend about his new book, This Ordinary Stardust, A Scientist's Path from Grief to Wonder. How does it feel to be getting these reviews? Kirkus mentioned this, an insightful exploration of loss and the role of intellectual curiosity and spiritual openness in addressing it.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's nice. I'm glad some people are receiving it well. You know, honestly, it's such a personal story that it feels a little surreal to have it out there in the world. It's first purpose, as I told you before, when Diana asked me to write it, was really hoping that it just helps other people who are going through hard times to yeah. know they're not alone, and that maybe give them some paths to think about it a little bit differently. So
yeah.
I kind of care about that more than I care about a review. Honestly.
Definitely. No, definitely. And so at what point did she ask you to write this?
It was just about 2 months before she died. I think it was, she had switched into a point. I mean, we knew from the beginning that she had what brain tumor known as a glioblastoma, which almost nobody survives them for very long. And so we knew what her fate was likely to be. But mm-hmm. as some of her symptoms really started to take hold, she asked me to do it.
And there was no way you were not going to do this. No way.
Yeah, I mean, I've been joking with people. No pressure there, right? Thanks a lot. But
I
mean, I just, at that point, I knew I had to do it.
Yeah. As a writer myself, I feel that sometimes we're just not ready to write at a certain point, and then you have to sit with it. And, of course, you know, her requesting that. But, you know, it helps us put an experience that was so painful in writing and put it aside and capture it. And I don't know for me if this works for you, but it kind of helps me move forward.
Oh, absolutely. And that's part of the origin, too, that I've always liked to write. And I had I'd started a blog before any of this hit. It was more just about communicating science more broadly. And then the day Neva was diagnosed, I went home that night and just wrote about it as really as a way for me to move through things precisely mm-hmm. as you suggest. And mm-hmm. Without thinking about it much, threw it up on the blog and had a number of people reach out to say that it helped them. And that was kind of the path towards recognizing that it, you know, maybe could help both me and others, and really, I think, partly why Diane asked me to write it.
Yes.
But I think she didn't say this, but I think she also knew it would help me as well, and it did.
Yes. Wow. So let's talk about this. How do our life choices affect our bodies? Because you talk about choosing hope over fear, for example.
Yeah, and so, I mean, one of the things that I later got very curious about and thought a lot about is that, you know, Diana's ability to kind of meet her fate with remarkable ways was astonishing. And she just kept doing what she's always doing. She was an incredibly curious person in science, and so I knew some of this as a biologist, but I looked a lot more deeply into the neurobiology of it later, reading the book, and you know, and simply put, that when you know we're wired to freak out about stuff for good reason and to stress out, and that bathes our body in a whole bunch of stress hormones that are helpful and necessary for an immediate response to some danger, but they don't do us much good in the long run. Mm-hmm. And whereas when we actively pursue things like curiosity and hope and those positive ones, it actually bathes us in a different set of internal chemicals that make us feel better and don't chew us up inside nearly as much. So there's a real biological connection to that that is healthier in the moment and healthier long-term as well. And so that's one of the things I just try to explore a bit more in the book is why that works and why we should actively think about it.
Yeah. Has writing this book made you think about new paths or new directions in your life?
Oh, boy, great question. Yeah, I suppose so, right? I mean, it's certainly, they write about my view of science has expanded and shifted, and I really found it as this source of comfort and spirituality. I mean, part of what I'm trying to convey in it is that I think that's something that's accessible to a whole lot of people. You don't have to be a lifelong scientist like me to I think, benefit from that. And mm-hmm. so I think about that a lot more now, and I think a lot more about some of those active choices of, you know, trying to choose more positive approaches and dig into curiosity and actually exercise those brain muscles of curiosity and the rest in a deliberate way more than I used to.
Yeah. Well, having a curiosity, being open, being a lifelong learner, as you know, is a game changer.
It is. It is.
Could you tell me about, because I don't know what this is, the science of biogeochemistry?
I know, it's a mouthful. So that's what I do, and what that really means is it's also a form of an ecologist. And so a biogeochemist studies the chemical elements that make up life and how they go in and out of life, between life and the world around us. And so, you know, the basic things we're all made of, carbon, nitrogen, phosphorus, oxygen, they spend time in life forms and they spend time in rocks or water or air. And a biogeochemist kind of studies those cycles. And part of my draw to it from the beginning is not just that it's actually pretty fascinating when you get into it. It shows all these amazing ways in which the world is connected. But humans, through our activity, have really changed some of those cycles. That's why the climate is changing. That's why, you know, we have dead zones in the ocean. That's all linked to making big changes in biogeochemical cycles. So that's a lot of the work that I did, was looking into that.
Okay. Is that what you continue to do?
Kind of. I don't do much direct science anymore, which I really miss. I get involved because I work as a dean now at the University of Montana, so it means that my job is more about supporting the success of others, and, mm-hmm. and I like that in many ways. I love being here. It's a great job, but I do miss being out in the field more.
Yeah. I saw a video clip. I was going to put it up on my show blog, but it talks about what you went through with your wife and your daughter. Were you living in Colorado at the time?
I was, yeah.
In Boulder?
Yep.
I love
Boulder. Yeah, that's where we were there for a long time.
Yeah. And at what point did you move to Montana?
Moved to Montana about 4 years ago now. Right in the middle of the pandemic. Great time to go. But but I also grew up here. That was part of it. So it's a confluence of a nice job and the town in which I grew up.
That's great. And how is your daughter doing?
She's doing great. Thank you for asking. Yeah, she turns 15 next week. And
wow.
You know, she will live with some lifelong consequences of her own tumor, but they're very manageable, and they don't really prevent her from living a completely normal life. So she's doing really well.
That's fantastic. Tell me about your documentary film series, Let Science Speak.
Yeah, so that was a number of years ago now, and that was an idea that came from a woman by the name of Christine Arena, who was kind of a high-level PR executive who decided that she wanted to put her skills more to good. And one of the projects was working with some folks to do a documentary series. So there are short films of half a dozen of us. And it really was about trying to show scientists as full human beings, understanding that people, you know, to really reach people, you kind of need to reach their hearts before their minds. And that was the point. So it was a different and really great process to be part of. And so they reached out to me because of that story and asked if I'd be willing to tell it.
I think that might have been the video clip I saw.
Probably so.
It's on YouTube, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
What else would you like listeners to know about your book?
Oh, I might just restate what I said before, is that I would encourage people, if they do read it, to, even if they're not scientists, to think a little bit about how what I call just thinking like a scientist is accessible to lots of people.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, one of the things I try to lay out is that science sometimes gets portrayed as something that should be very inhuman and take the emotions out of it and all the rest. And I just don't agree. The best scientists I know are fully invested in their work and very emotional about it because they really care. And when you start to look at that whole picture, I think it can do a lot for us beyond just some new technical invention, figuring out an iPhone, building a bridge. There's something deeper in all of it.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a copy of your book nearby?
I don't, actually.
Okay. I was going to ask you if you wanted to read a couple pages. That's fine. No problem.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, yeah. No, it's fine. So I want to mention your book is available everywhere books are sold, right? I know it's on Amazon.
I think so, yeah.
And are you doing any speaking events coming up where people could come hear you?
I'm doing a few. I mean, I'm doing something here in Missoula. I'll be doing a couple in the Front Range of Colorado next month. I'll do one at the Boulder Bookstore on August 1st and one at the Tattered Cover in Denver on July 30th, I believe. And then past that, the publisher is kind of working on setting all these things up, and I just do what they tell me. That's about what I know right now.
Well, this is great. And this show, by the way, my show is called Get the Funk Out.
Nice.
Thank
like
you. And I put it together because after losing a friend of mine at the end of 2010, I took a year off and I thought, I want a way to heal. I want to create this way to heal. And I also want to have a platform for people to share their stories. So I appreciate you calling in and sharing yours.
Oh, well, likewise. Thanks so much for taking the time.
One last question. What advice would you give people that have gone through something maybe similar or equally as painful, and they feel they want to put it down on paper? What was the process like for you?
If they want to put it down on paper, I would encourage them to do it. I really would. I think what you said earlier, at least for me, but I think for a lot of people, is a great thing to do. Is as painful as it might feel, sitting down and writing about it is one of the ways that I think you do shift your brain from just feeling stressed to feeling a little creativity, feeling a little ability to step back and think it through in different ways. And you know, grief is rough, right? It's, I think I write in the book, it's the most powerful force I've known. But there's no way past it but through it. And writing is one of the things that I think can help move someone through it. And you don't have to publish it. You don't even if you're just doing it privately for yourself. I think it's a good way to work through your feelings and figure out how to take that next step.
Absolutely. By the way, Alan, I have a question about the cover. So,
sure.
Is the cover an upside down image?
It is.
I just realized that when I flipped it upside down. I'm like, wait a minute. Could you explain that?
Well, that was the idea of the woman who was the cover artist, right? And we worked with some basic ideas there of, you know, the images of stars from the title, but also the landscape is from Costa Rica, which is where I worked for a long time, where Diana and I met. And it was really her idea when she was playing with combinations to flip it upside down, maybe to convey something unexpected. And I really liked it. I thought she did a brilliant job with it.
Yeah, no, I just realized when I flipped the book, I said, why is the green on the top? Yeah, people will have to see the book. So I've been speaking with Dr. Alan Townsend. This Ordinary Stardust is his new book, A Scientist's Path from Grief to Wonder. Congratulations, and I hope you'll keep in touch. And I will put this show up as a podcast within an hour after I wrap.
Fantastic. Thanks. So nice to talk with you.
You too. Be well. If you missed any part of this show today, both segments will be up on my show blog within an hour. And the show blog, again, is getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. I want to mention, if you're not familiar with us, you can visit us at kuci.org and see a complete list of our PA shows and our music shows. We've got an incredible mix of talent here at the station. And you can follow us on our socials at KUCI-FM. If you want to find out about being a guest, you can send me an email to Janeane, J-A-N-E-A-N-E, at KUCI.org. That's J-A-N-E-A-N-E at KUCI.org. Coming up at the top of the hour is Pass Forward with SoCal New Waver. He's going to be joining us at 10. I'm going to leave you with a little music. I hope you have a great Wednesday, everyone, and I'll be back next week. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.